You're listening to the Canned Air Podcast, your sidekick in the quest for knowledge, power, and entertainment. So strap yourselves in and prepare for victory!
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I am Randy Hardenbrook.
And joining us today, another one of those very special guests. And you know what? Maybe I shouldn't say that, because all of our guests really are special. And I'm not saying that, you know, trying to like back up what I just said. It's the truth. Everyone brings their own thing. But, you know, one of these guests that we grew up with, one of these guests that's been in our lives without us even knowing it sometimes. You may have heard him as General Hawk on G.I. Joe, Duckworth in the new DuckTales. Did you guys know that?
Yeah, I saw that today, too.
Arishem, the great big Celestial from the Eternals, on top of, I mean, Christ, almost every Marvel character. Between different cartoons, movies, and video games, he's voiced Wolverine, Professor Xavier, Iron Man, Jarvis, Apocalypse, Electro, Mysterio, Nick Fury, Vision, and the list goes on.
Not to mention the anime, too.
Oh, tons of anime, but I don't know. I really don't know a lot about anime. That's more your guys' department. But he's best known for playing Megatron in Beast Wars, Beast Machines, Armada in Energon, and Optimus Prime, and Transformers Animated. He's the only Transformers alum to have played both Optimus and Megatron.
Playing both sides of the coin.
That's pretty incredible. I bet you he does pretty well at those conventions. We welcome voice actor David Kay to the show today, and had a great time talking with him. It was a lot of fun. Want to get him back in the future when we have some more time. But yeah, at the same time, I don't think we could have possibly fit any more into 30 minutes. For 30 minutes, that was a lot.
Yeah, it was. It was awesome.
So we're very excited for you guys to hear that. But before we do anything, you know how it goes around here. Don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air and at CannedAirPodcast.com. Two different ways you can support us. Our merch tab, where there's all kinds of t-shirts, a lot of which have designs by Joshua Bellis that we love. All those same designs are not only on the t-shirts, but hats, hoodies, mugs, stickers, all over the place on there. So that's the place to go. What?
We love the shirts, not Josh.
What did I say?
Well, yeah, because you're like... We have these shirts from Joshua Bellis that we love.
Well,
just forget it.
I'm not cut. I think that's just your mind working in a special way.
Jack apparently has some unexpressed feelings he needs to deal with.
And we do love Josh.
Yeah, we do.
We do. But then also our Patreon page, which you don't even have to go to our website to access. You can go to patreon.com/CannedAirPod. Or is it just Canned Air? Just search. You'll find it. Where you can, for $5 to $10 a month, get access to a bunch of extra content that isn't available to the general public. So a few ways for you to support us and get stuff in return. Gentlemen, what am I forgetting?
No matter how you're listening to us, if you're able to drop us a like or even a rating, we'd really appreciate it. It definitely isn't just an ego boost. It legitimately helps. And then also a huge shout out to evergreenpodcast.com, the network we are so proud to be a part of.
There it is in a nice little package. So without any further ado, let's just turn our attention over to our conversation with David Kay. David, thank you so much for taking time to be here on the show with us. It's really an honor to have you on. Thank you.
Oh, good. Yes.
Oh, wow. Was that the Megatron yes button?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I'll bring some to Dallas when I go coming up. I'll bring some this week. I'm running out, actually. I say that just to sell them, but I'm actually literally running out.
I understand why. It's a cool little thing to have. I'd get one if you were in Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
Screw that easy button.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, again, it's awesome to have you here, man. We have a lot of questions for you, but I want to start what you were doing right before you were doing voiceover, which is working in radio at age 17, being an on-air talent. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your radio career and what exactly you were doing.
You know, it's funny because I was talking to somebody today and an old memory popped up, literally just like within a couple hours ago. An old memory popped up. And we're not talking about our personalities and why we are the way we are and how we develop over the years. And when I was younger than that, I think it was before that. I might have been a year before that. There was a big station in town in my hometown. You know, in the scheme of things, they were big when I was growing up there. And it was a place called Peterborough, Ontario, in Canada. And since I'm more in Ventura County here, this is so many years later, but a long time ago, I befriended a guy, funny guy, used to work at the local cable television stations. Every community had a local cable TV. All this crazy, weird people had TV shows. Remember that? Remember that, those times?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Sure.
It's on YouTube now, but, you know, it used to be cable. And there was your local community cable television station. And I was behind the camera. I would go over after high school, after classes, and it was close to my high school, and we'd hang out. And, you know, we were camera for these goofy shows and stuff. And this one guy who was a camera guy, we used to giggle back and forth, and we got along. And he worked up at the radio station with the big stick in the sky. And I was enthralled by radio. Even at a young age, I used to listen to it. I had radio heroes and people I used to listen to, voices and stuff. And he invited me up to come up, and I don't know what it was. They were going to put me on the air or something. And at midnight, I was going to go in and do the news. I don't know what it was. They had me on, and they kind of did a rug pull where I don't know how they even introduced me or whatever it was, but they cued me and I started talking and they're all laughing and I was looking up at them and reading this. And they didn't. They pretended to put me on the air, and it was. I know it sounds weird, but at that young age, and you're like, oh my God, this is my opportunity. I had called my parents. I called everybody. I called my girlfriend. Hey, I'm going to be on the radio. You know, it was like literally. And then it shattered me. Like literally, I was shattered. I don't ever think I talked to that guy again. But at that young age, I remember that was a horrible experience. I think, oh, that's why I am the way I am.
So he wasn't doing it like a learning experience. He was just being a dick.
This is it. This is going to be my, you know, hey. And anyway, it was a weird sort of like, you know, one of those high school weird jokes. And it wasn't until about a year and a half after that, I think it was, or a year after that, so I must have been younger, yeah, that I actually got a job at 17 in high school doing overnights on the weekends at the competitor's radio station in town. And it was, I worked at the YMCA pro shop selling squash rackets and racquetball rackets and sweatbands and crap. And the morning man used to come in. And I was enthralled because it's this personality in our, you know, come in. We used to talk. Right. Hi, Dave. How are you today? You know, hat, hood, hat. And out of the station, next thing I know, I met with the program director and I sat behind. I recorded something on a cassette. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
I had this job overnight weekends. I had to train, obviously, but that's where it all started. That's where my love for all things, you know, with a mic involved began. And those years were so much fun, man, to the point where I had all these albums and I don't think I've played them since probably the 80s. Wow. And I finally have a turntable system downstairs. And to be able to play the albums I haven't had on my turntable since I was a teenager is really cool. So I'm listening to all these albums now, going through all the all the collection. But that's where my love, and that's where it all started. You know Roger Bumpus, who plays Squidward on SpongeBob?
Right.
Roger and I were talking in Florida at Pensacon, and he's exactly the same thing. He had he started young in radio, and a lot of us come up through that, you know, and comparing, you know, radio stories. And that's where a lot of us started. We sort of learned about this thing here, you know, the magic that can happen.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
Yeah, in a nutshell, there you go.
Now, while you were working in radio, I read this online that you were offered by an agent or your agent a VO audition for General Hawk and G.I. Joe.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, to Vancouver. So I jumped around in radio. That's as you do. You know, the way you progress is to go to larger markets and get better and
sure.
better.
Sure.
Yeah. And I actually went to a smaller market. until I got to Vancouver, I started doing the morning show there and doing voices. And I was, that was say 89, 90, 89. Yeah. Somewhere in that area. And, I was fortunate enough to be involved in the morning show there, Dean Hill and, you know, Constable Bob. And it was like, I don't know if you remember, if you're old enough, but Z100 Scott Shannon, New York, that was they had the morning zoo. That was the template for all the radio, all the great morning shows. Was in Rick Dees, who is Rick and I have since become friends, and all in LA here. But yeah, doing voices on that show, coming up with goofy songs. I always reference Cowboy Dick as one of them. He's just this crazy cowboy that would just come in and write these stupid songs, and they were so much fun to do. And, boys and girls, Cowboy Dick, you know, it's time to a little song about a pet chicken. Chicken, little pet chicken, hanging from the highest tree. You know, whatever. I would do all that kind of weird crap. And so I had all this time in the afternoon, because morning shows, you're up at 4 godforsaken a.m.
Right.
And you're done by like 9, 10. So it's like, oh, I've got like all day. What do I do now? And I signed up for this goofy commercial modeling course. Now the modeling part was one of those, you know, I think back in the day it was like a cash grab, where if you had an eye in the center of your head, or, you know, you had, you know, hey, you could make a great model, you should spend $2,000 and study with us. And I go, well, you know, that's kind of creepy and weird, but but the other part was commercial, and where you would learn lines, and it was a different teacher. And you'd, you know, stand in front of a little camera and learn how to audition and do commercial stuff. And I kind of dug that. It was like, oh, this is kind of fun.
Sure.
I started doing theater in a little place called Deep Cove Theater out in North Vancouver, up there. Great little theater company. And started learning the craft from friends of mine who had been to RADA in London and studied and did things properly, you know. So I was just like, you know, I was kind of a little like a sponge learning here. I fell in love with the act of performing, or because it's really weird, because I'm a kind of a private guy and I really don't like, I'm uncomfortable, really. But here I am, you know, on stage doing stuff. And every night before I'd go out, I'd feel sick to my stomach and I'd go, what the fuck am I doing? What am I, why am I doing this? Why am I putting myself through this hell? Then you get out there and then you learn the lines. After you come off, you go, oh, wow, what a rush.
Yeah.
you know, there's this feeling you get like, I want to do that again. As much as I hated it, I want to do it again. And so you want to get better. But so that was all happening during this trip to this agency. And my first agent taught the commercial course and said, you know, you're not bad at this. You should. I'm like a new agent, and if you want to, we could start sending you out on commercials. And I go, sure. And so that's in a nutshell how all that started happening. And then one day, I think early on into the, you know, agent client situation, he called me. I must have had a cell phone. It's probably that big at that time. The old Russian cell phones.
Oh yeah.
I can't hear you. Hello. And he said, do you know how to do voices? I said, sure. I don't know what the hell are you talking about. Voices? Yeah, I guess.
I'm talking,
that.
Right?
Yeah. So he said, well, I have this audition for G.I. Joe. And I went, oh? Because I grew up, I had the Mego dolls, man. I used to play with the Migos, like the original G.I. Joe dolls. I used to watch the... you know, there was the cartoons that were on before that. I mean, I was into that. And I said, yeah, sure. So Deke Animation had an office here in Burbank, and they were doing shows up in Canada. And Deke Animation, as we all know they're called, we always used to say it was stood for Done in Canada, which is, you know, So here I am. I really didn't know too much about this whole process, and I just kind of went in on a whim, and I grabbed a bunch of characters, and it was so much fun. And then I remember Paul, the director, said, "Grab a hold of get General Hawk. Take a look at General Hawk." And okay, so I had General. I looked him up, and it was. I always tell people the same old thing about that. Yo, Joe, follow me toward the danger. You know, I'm just like, I just made up. This voice on the fly is sort of made him a little, you know, I don't know, a little older, whatever. And I ended up getting cast as this is General Hawk, the great American hero. Right. And I didn't really sit, it didn't sit well with me until many years later when I became an American citizen. I come out of the convention center downtown LA with my little flag and we're all together. I went, hey, wait a minute. I can say now that I play G.I. Joe, General Great American Hero, because it worked. Now it's proper. Because I could never really, well, you know, I was in, so I felt, that's the funny thing is, you know, when you become a citizen, it's an exciting day and everything. But that was the first thing in my mind was, hey, I can now say the great American hero because it works now. But that, and that's how that all, you know, that story sort of enveloped. But that was the beginning of all of it. That became, right. I remember the first session at Ocean Sound, Ocean Group in Vancouver, that first session. I think Gary Chalk was in the show. Ian was probably in the show. It was all the same. Scotty McNeil. It was all the same characters. A few people I can't remember now. But I remember walking out and getting in my car and going, oh, okay, how do I quit everything I'm doing and just do this forever? How does this? And so that was the moment I went, all right, I know what I need to do. And this is what I want. And everything took a back seat, and I started focusing on theater and getting some online, you know, some on camera parts, a couple of X-Files. That was horrible on camera, but it was all just training, you know. Sure. It was
right.
That's where that all started.
That's what I was going to inquire about is training, because it seems like, again, with your theater and radio experience, you really probably didn't need a whole lot. You really just hit the ground running.
Well, unbeknownst to me, you know, but since, you know, I continually sort of work on things back in the day, you know, I would take every class. I would, there's one class in particular, one teacher in particular. I don't know if she ever really knows how important she was to my career. She still teaches up there, as far as I know. Shay Hampton is her name, and she taught like I think it's a Meisner method, one of those methods, you know. and it's basically the class would be a little theater seating, about, you know, 15 students, and then she would have scenes, and there's like short scenes, and it's called cold reading. This really teaches you, you know, when you have to go in and read a part, or they have to throw something in front of you in a cartoon. And you go, okay, do this. Mm-hmm. This is really great training. And it's, you look at each other in the eyes. You know how difficult it is to look at someone and stare at them if you don't know them, especially.
Right.
Really uncomfortable, right? It's like you want to look away. I don't want to look. What am I, you know? And it forces you to use your eyes and stare into the soul of another person. And you're not allowed to turn over the scene until you've you sort of made a connection or feel like you're ready. Okay. Sometimes a good indication is if you start to laugh, and she's turn it over now. And you sort of, why did you do that to me? And that, oh, wow, that's cool. You know, cause that's how we talk to one another. We don't know what we're going to say from 1 minute to the next, right? From one right, second right. to the next. So it taught you to connect first. To there's another human being here, and to listen to what they're saying, and you're not allowed to look down and deliver the next line until you heard what they said. So they would deliver a line, and you look at them, and you would say, "Oh,
wow."
And you look, then you go, "Well, this is the reason that I love you." And then all of a sudden, you start to feel, "Oh, I'm getting emotional," you know, and you know what I mean?
So
that's one of the most amazing classes, and one of the most important things I think you need to learn if you're going into this business is to make a connection with another person and to listen to them. It's not so much about acting, as we've all heard. It's more about listening, and then you react to what someone says. And it's invaluable information. And I don't do a lot of teaching, and I should actually do more. I don't really do enough, I think. But it's a time situation.
Sure.
Where I've taught trailer classes. Movie trailers are a tough one because you're really walking the fine line, especially back in the day when Don LaFontaine was doing them. And there's a way to do them. There's a way that they sound great and a way that they just don't sound great. And you have to connect it. And it's there's no other person. You have to turn this thing on, look at the script, and create this. You know, you have to read, but you also, you're telling a story. So there's a lot going on in a simple little movie trailer. And I give everyone scenes to do with each other, and it's amazing how they would do the scene before doing this little exercise and after. And it's amazing the connection if you connect the piece. And this one girl in Toronto, this last class I did back in September, I gave her it was a Toyota commercial. It wasn't really a trailer, but it was really well written. Mm-hmm. It was about a father and a daughter. And she read it the second time, and people teared up. And I said, wow. Oh my God, what were you thinking about? She said, I was thinking about my dad. And I go, boom, there you go. So they used to take trips together. And I remember, I said, exactly. That's what you have to do when you read stuff.
Right. Tap into that relatable emotion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a connection. And so when people say connect it, you go, what? That's what I mean about making a connection. So yeah, they're all cartoons and
even funny voices like this, or
Clank when he says, I love you, Ratchet. My goal is to make you cry. I want you to feel something. This is a being, whether it's a robot, whether it's yes, I want, I have them all here. I have them all here. There's another one.
Oh, man.
I need you. What else is on my desk? Well, I got to show you some toys quickly. There he is.
Hey, man. Oh, you got the camera on the wrong side of the room, man.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I have, I have him. Anyway, but that's the whole idea is these beings are, they have to have a soul and a heartbeat and they exist. So it's a part of who we are. Some of that training that I talked about earlier kind of goes all into that.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
Awesome.
Now, when you were auditioning for Beast Wars, I had heard you say that you had read for all the main characters, but that you were angling hard toward the villains because you like bad guys. And I'm curious what it is about the villain that you prefer that role over the hero.
They're much more interesting, aren't they?
I mean, that's the truth.
I mean, a hero, we know that I always gravitated toward the dark heroes, like the dark Batman, heroes with problems. I mean, I always love these detective stories on now where the hero is flawed. We're all flawed. We all have our flaws, but that's quite interesting. But the old days of the cartoon, I'm the good guy and I'm going to save the world. And that's almost a parody. It's almost, there's something wrong with him. We don't know what it is.
He's too happy.
Not something's weird. But bad guys, it's in the way it was written, the way Larry Dottillo and Bob Forward wrote these episodes, it was very Shakespearean.
Yeah.
And it really, we're looking and I go, oh my God, this is Shakespeare. It all goes back. All the storytelling goes back to the ancient Greeks. It goes, and before that, it's storytelling. And so in Shakespeare in particular, it's all debate. And so when you have a character like a Megatron or a character out of Shakespeare, it's like, and poor Hamlet, to be or not to be, that is a question. It's like, well, if I do this, this will happen. If I do that, and that's Megatron. He's thinking through. He's like, if I do this, this will happen. To be or not to be, that is a question. Whether 'tis noble in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune or take up arms against a sea of trouble. There's the rub. It's debate.
You're right.
And I just started loving it, man. Beast Wars, first time I've ever said this to anyone, really in sort of made me love Shakespeare. It made me understand it. It made me want to see it. Hmm. I went to see my friend Christopher Gaze, who started the Bard on the Beach up there in Vancouver. I haven't talked to Christopher in many years. And I went to see a play and went, oh my God, I get it. I get it. And because when you're younger, you're not really ready for that. When you see a play, you're not, you're fidgety. I don't know what's going on. But at some point in your life, you're going, oh my God, I get it. I understand it. Because of this cartoon.
That's incredible.
So that's sort of, and you gravitate toward these characters with layers. It's like, it's like we were just in Sicily and it was invaded by everyone on the planet. So what you have is a country of complexity. You have the food and the wine and the people are all this complex that goes back thousands of years, some Arab, some Mediterranean, some French, that's what these characters are. Mm-hmm. They're players and it's up to you and your job to sort of find out you know, even a character like, you know, in Master of the Universe, I mean, Battle Cat, he has layers, he has a life, he has a history. I'm a protector, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to protect, you know. That all goes into this, creating characters. And the only bad part is of all this is you don't get to do it all the time. You know, right. You get cast in some shows and don't get cast in others, and you want to just keep giving it and keep doing it, you know, for as long as you can. That's the only drawback is you're not going to do every show.
Right. Sure.
Sometimes months go by, you're not doing anything. And that's the only drawback is you love it so much. You need to do it. So
it's so funny you mentioned Shakespeare. Cause when I grew up with Beast Wars, that was my Transformers. And, you know, having watched the original series, your Megatron, I mean, obviously he's a different character, but he has so much more of an eloquent speech than, you know, the OG, Megatron. Was that kind of where you had Shakespeare in your head and you just kind of came up with that voice and that kind of way of speak, or was that kind of written into the show?
It a lot to do with the writing. I mean, the writers were, Bob and Larry were amazing, and the creators were amazing. So it ends up being a combination, but the writing is so, you know, I mean, the WGA strike is on right now, and you got to support them because that's a talent, and they, you know, they create the stories that come out of our mouths and that sort of thing. And it's so important. They're brilliant. That's I always say to writers, how do you do that? Like I don't know if you ever read Charles Dickens at all, picked up a book and started reading this old fourth edition, over 100-year-old book. You know, a friend of mine bought me for Christmas one year, and I sat down and finally read Tale of Two Cities. And I went, oh my, like, how do you do that? So the character, your question, I'm sorry, I sidetracked. Your question was once again,
just where the voice for your version of Megatron came from.
Yeah. Well, at the time I was a big fan of Anthony Hopkins and Sean Connery and, you know, and the character was, they gave us drawings of it, was a dinosaur. And I thought, well, what if a lizard and Sean Connery and Anthony, like, how would that be? Like the thoughtfulness and scheming of an Anthony Hopkins and the bit of a, you know, lisp of a Shakespeare of Sean Connery. Like, well, how is that? And I would marry the two and have a, yes, excellent, bit of a lisp once in a while, just because he has a dinosaur mouth. And you create this character who's, you know, thinking, you know, stop it. You know, it's just becomes, and of course, as you get older, you want to do it again because, oh, I could have done that better and I could have done that better. But at the time, that's the tools that I had to use. And I was so fortunate to be able to be cast in this because I had no idea how big this really was.
Right.
I had seen G1. I was a big sort of Flintstones, Hanna-Barbera and Bugs Bunny fan.
Oh, yeah.
So I watched a couple shows. G.I. Joe was one before, but I really had no concept of Transformers until Venus and I were a guest, and Ian was with us, went to Rochester in the 90s, mid-90s for BotCon in Rochester, New York. And that's when I went, oh, this is a thing. I didn't know.
A little bit.
And voices sort of evolve. If you notice, Homer Simpson's voice evolved.
Oh, yeah.
You
know, sure.
It changed, and I was mad at that. But every voice, like my Optimus from the TF Animated, evolved because they thought originally like a younger, and then I kind of fell in and was basically my own voice. Like, okay, who's with me? Transform and roll out. And I go, okay, there he is right there. It takes a few shows to get to really sink into it.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. You know, you had mentioned the writing on Beast Wars, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to keep circling back to that, but there was a lot of really heavy subjects, I remember, for a kid's show. And did you have any particular favorite episodes or arcs just that kind of stood out to you?
Well, the Dinobot and, you know, thing with Scotty and the golden disc and all this stuff. And it was like deep. Yeah. I mean, it really was written for adults. And then when you got into the Beast Machines and it got, you know, Megatron sort of lost his humor and it became, you know, I'm all in on survival and I want to be the, you know, the leader of the entire kingdom and the universe. there was some heavy stuff in there, and some people, I think that's why it sort of stands the test of time a bit, because it's certain parts and certain times of our lives, all these things become relatable. You go, oh, mm-hmm. like I said, layers, right? And I don't know if any of us thought, oh, we're going to write this and do this because we want it to last generations. I did that thing. We're going to last a season. I had no idea. Nobody really knows. It's just all the parts come together. And I have kids coming up to me now. They're dads and moms and who started watching, you know, Beast Wars and when they were younger and before families, which makes me feel old automatically. But their kids are watching it. Oh, my kids watch it with me. And how old are you? I'm 9. I go, really? He said, and he loved the, want to hear me do the yes and all. So I thought, oh, that whole thing's going to die out, the yes thing. But no, now I got the kids coming and asking me to do yes. And I go, oh, okay. I guess it just seems it's just a magical show. Some shows resonate, you know? Yeah, right, I mean, the toys are huge. I mean, this is nothing. Now, when this came out, I thought, oh, here we go. Look at that. It's got all the nuance. But now, you know, there's a company at the last TFCon here in Burbank of those are actual robots, and it's Peter's voice, transform and roll out, you know, and this thing gets up and it's, oh, there it is. It's a robot, and it reacts and it dances, and you're thinking, okay, there's where we're going. So it's really about the toys. Honestly.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Pretty soon the toys will be playing by themselves while the kids are sitting there watching.
I mean, that's pretty much what's happening with that thing he's talking about. Yeah.
It was it. Like, this thing, I could be on my phone here, and this thing's by itself doing its little, you know.
I can't imagine having that stuff
Autobots,
when we were kids.
Oh, wow. And on there, that's a little toy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are quickly running out of time. I've got one last question for you that's just kind of out of left field. You read stuff online sometimes and you don't know if it's true or not. But I've read that you keep so busy with your VO work that you have a mobile mini recording studio in your car that you are able to pull over and just deliver lines if ever needed.
Yes.
Is that true?
That is true.
Wow.
That was it. Now, it's not like I'm constantly like doing voiceover. The day goes by where this morning, for example, all of a sudden WWE calls and I'm doing something with them and I have clients and I have some concert tours. So things, you know, come in through the day. I have time. But some days, you know, it gets busy. And if I travel, which I do a lot these days, I have a portable studio called a Tri-Booth that my friend, another great VO guy, Rick Wasserman. He's the guy famous for, among other things, tons of other things, The Walking Dead. Yeah, that's Rick. So he came up, and my engineer, who I used to service all this room, and Rick uses him, they came up with this Tri-Booth. It's PVC pipe. It's got acoustic blankets. It fits into a Pelican case, and I really shipped it to Sicily. I got there. My box was there. I ship it home. And in Sicily, Pixar calls, and I'm working on something from a trailer for them. Can't tell you what it is, but it was a really cool trailer. And I was in Sicily delivering the product. So in the car, the acoustics, I've had Teslas for a while, and it's because of Corey Burton. It's his fault. He had one of like the first Teslas here, and oh, hey, man. So it was Corey's fault. And I go, reasons it's tough to kind of, to jump into another vehicle or different cars because the acoustics in the car are perfect, is studio quality. If I'm traveling, if let's say we're traveling north to Northern California, we're going to wine country or something, or just up the road here, I'll bring the gear. I have I'll show you what it is quick.
Sure.
It's in my box.
We're going to start podcasting in the car.
We're going to get a Tesla?
Wow. Thought maybe you'd take care of that, and we just record it.
So this is the mic I travel. It's a beautiful mic. I have to travel with a higher-end mic because it has to sound the same as it's coming out of this studio. I can't have too much difference.
Gotcha.
So this is my friend George put together, and it's a clamp. And so this clamps on to the steering wheel. There's a piece that goes on here.
Oh, cool.
And the mic cage cranks in, and literally in front of my face is the microphone, and I have the laptop and an Apollo Twin, and I can do anything. I can even do live sessions. I've done Last Week Tonight on the road. I pulled over, did their sessions on a Saturday morning. I've done their show, and they direct me through the car speakers, and then I turn them down, and I talk, and now, you know, something on whatever, and then I can hear them. I turn the volume up, and I hear them through the car speakers. They direct me. We do it again. I send the file off using my cell phone as a hotspot, and it's in New York. Within seconds.
Crazy. Wow.
So I can take this box with me, and I can set up, like I'm doing a bunch of conventions coming up in Dallas on the 9th weekend. So I'll probably, I don't want to sort of bring the whole studio, but I can bring this on the plane, and I would clamp it to maybe a closet thing, or I'd clamp it somewhere. I've used an ironing board before to clamp it and create like a blanket around, and I can, you know, I can do my stuff. So I can go in here, the same idea with a car. The car is a perfect sound booth. So you pull over, you charge the car, or you just pull over if you need something right away and you deliver a few lines and you're, you know, it's all there.
That's incredible.
So that's so cool.
That is really incredible. What an age we live in, man.
Yeah, really.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, the Marvel movie we did with the Eternals, I mean, all that was done here in this booth. It was all, and they were all on where you are on there. And, you know, Cloak and Dagger, they bring you the hard drive. Guy waits outside, you do the session, and you give him everything. I mean, the technology accelerated from the pandemic because we had to keep going.
Wow.
But, yeah.
David, thank you so much for taking time to be here with us, man.
So where are you located now? Where are you?
Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, you're in Columbus. So, I haven't been to Columbus, and I always want to go. There's a convention or two there that happen quite every year, isn't it? Like a...
Yeah, there's Fanboy Expo. Yeah. There's a
Fan Expo.
Fan Expo. Yeah. What's the anime one that happens too?
OhioCon.
OhioCon. That's the big one. Yeah.
Oh, that's the big one. So, because I was in Cincinnati quite a while ago, I had a great time there. But yeah, so I'm doing a few Fan Expos this year. My first time with Fan Expo, Dallas coming up, Denver, beginning end of June, beginning of July. We got Boston, August 5th, September up in Edmonton. That's my first four Fan Expo. So hopefully we get to see you guys in person one of these days.
Yeah, absolutely, man. That would be incredible. I got to get me one of those Megatron buttons, too.
Where's my rubber ducky? Yeah.
Well, thank you for being so generous with your time, David. We really appreciate
it. Appreciate it. Cheers, guys.
All right. And once again, that was our conversation with David Kay. Told you guys it was a good conversation. Right?
Oh, yeah. It's so fun to hear, you know, like Megatron, like from growing up, like, yeah, it just
I still have chills.
Fangirl moment.
I mean, you guys, I think, especially you when it comes to Beast Wars, guys are more familiar with Transformers than I am. But let me tell you, as somebody who's not that familiar, you don't have to be that familiar to know that voice.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Hearing that Megatron voice come through my headphones, it made the hair on my arm stand
up. It's been so long, and the first line he said, it was just, oh. Yeah.
Jack had to change his pants. But. But you can find David on Instagram at DK, and that's KAYEVO. And check him out on his website, davidk.com. You can see his demo reels, see some of the other stuff he's done. I believe there's contact information on there.
And it sounds like he's going to be at Fanboy Expo in Dallas and a few others. So, just check that out.
We're going to have to keep our eyes on that because I would like to meet him in person. Not only for that button. I mean, I do want that button I was joking about. And for the people who are listening to the audio version of this, like Jack kind of pointed out, it looks like one of the Staples easy buttons, if you even remember that. But... it was purple and black.
It's badass.
And it just has Megatron.
Course. And it's got the Predacon logo on it.
That's what sweet. That is. I forgot what that logo looked like.
It looked really sweet.
Call yourself a fan.
But another big thank you to David for taking time to be on our show. It was so awesome. And to Samantha for setting this up for us. We had a great time and hope we can do it again in the future. But until then, Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to cannedairpodcast.com where you can listen, like, follow, subscribe, see some of our special guests, see some YouTube videos. And if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
That was as smooth as one of the shirts you can get on our Patreon page.
Ooh.
It's pretty smooth. It's pretty smooth. Silky smooth. And once again, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air, and the website Jack was just referring to, CannedAirPodcast.com. That's our home. That's our hub, amongst many others. You know, Evergreen Podcast Network, another good home of ours. And, of course, on all your podcast player of choices. But, yeah, head over to our website. Link for merch. Link for Patreon. Way for you to get things Canned Air-themed, either content or merchandise, and support us in the meantime. And what else, gentlemen?
Oh, you took the evergreen and the...
you got it. You got to improvise now.
All right. Well, you know what? Hey, we are coming up on episode 500 here in a few months. So
that we are.
If you are listening to us, and you... Well, obviously, you're listening to us. But, you know, if you're a longtime listener, you got a favorite episode.
If
you've
you're
got,
still listening to us. it
should be Randy's talking. We're gone. But, yeah, if you have a favorite episode, favorite moment from the show, email us. Send it to us. We'd love to hear it. We'd love
that's
to
a good
give
idea.
A
awesome.
Shout out
yeah.
on the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, if you guys do have any favorite memories from the past 500 episodes, let us know. It can be anything.
500 episodes in 10 years.
We might have forgot.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack's old.
A decade of Jesus. Canned Air. A decade. Think of, let that sink in. Yeah. This October will be a decade of Canned Air.
Damn.
I know. I don't know whether to celebrate or to, like, cry in the corner.
But go home and take a hot shower.
I think either way, there will probably be tears.
Yeah.
So I think that wraps up this episode. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
Be excellent to each other, everyone.
Wait, come back! The ice could break!
Whoops! Help!
Quickly, walk back to the edge!
Stop! You'll break through the ice!
Snow job!
Grab this branch! You should have been listening to Canned Air!
Now we know!
And knowing is half the battle!
Snow Job, how'd you get your name?
G.I. Joe!
This has been a Canned Air production.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not, it's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.